Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman, and Tech Talk is, of course, our weekly show looking at all the latest technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in touch with us, you're more than welcome. We always love to hear your thoughts or comments, or even if you've got any tips that you want to share. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. This week we'll be finding out what's been going on at the recent Sight Village Glasgow event. Amelia Hilton was there, so she'll be bringing us some of the action. Hubert Pavalkovic tries out the WikiTrip app that reads the stories behind your surroundings. And we'll also be testing out the Whisperflow voice dictation app. That's all coming up this week. We've got a full house in terms of co-hosts. Jackie Brown, Hubert Pavalkovic and Natalie Curran are all with me. We'll start with you first, Jackie. What's anything caught your eye this week?
Yeah, the Alexa Plus service is rolling out across the UK from the 19th of March. And it is only going to be available on, at the moment, the Echo Show 8, the Echo Show 11, the new Amazon Studio, and I think there's another speaker in there somewhere. But you can sign up to receive notifications about it, which I've done. Eventually, it will be available free to Prime members, but it is at the moment just at the initial stages of rolling out. So probably most people haven't got it yet. And if they have, it's early doors for that. So it'll be very interesting to see how good it is. I've seen one person in our community saying that it's quite good. It's early days, but it is more conversational. So, I don't know how much the subscription's going to be once it does roll out for people to pay. Those who don't have a Prime membership will probably have to pay a subscription if you really want that. And as I say, there are a lot of devices where it won't be working on those. And I've got like an original couple of Echoes. So I'm probably going to have to upgrade if I want that.
I'm also curious what it actually gives you, because I'm still kind of none the wiser as to what you get with that.
No, it seems to be saying that there's more conversation, that the conversation you have with it is deeper and richer and it does more things for you. But that's all kind of Amazon blurb. So we're just going to have to see.
On the subject of AI, though, I did notice that ChatGPT has also taken an update recently. And from an accessibility perspective, I think it's improved massively. You could always get it to work before, but they've just made a few small tweaks that I think have improved it. So the heading structure is a bit more logical. Instead of just having ChatGPT constantly announce, ChatGPT is thinking, it now tells you what it's doing. It's like thinking about this bit, looking for that bit, processing this, giving you that. And then when it's ready, so you don't need to keep checking, it will move your focus to the answer. So AI and accessibility are starting to catch up with each other a little bit, I think.
Going back to the Alexa Plus thing, so I think from what I gathered from what people have said, the idea of this is that a little bit like how you've got your you've got the voice mode features on Google Gemini or ChatGPT, which is where you can just basically talk to it. But it's like talking to a proper person. That's what Alexa Plus seems to give you, but I've heard mixed reviews, to be honest, because it's been in the US for a while. I think it might have been in Canada for a while as well. And it seems to be some people love it, some people hate it. I've not really seen an in-between.
It is going to be interesting. I don't know whether people will sign up to pay for it, though. It depends, I suppose, what they're asking per month.
I think it depends what it will offer in terms of what it will offer, and then in terms of individual users, how much they will use what it specifically offers as to whether they can justify the payment.
And if it's device specific, if you have multiple devices in the house, but it's only compatible in certain ones, Do you have to buy it individually for different devices? Does it apply to any that you've got?
Yeah, I think it runs across all the devices that it's going to be on when it's released here. So the Echo Show 8, the Echo Show 11, the new studio, they seem to be specific about the devices that it will work on. So if you're like me and you've got like the Pringle shaped one, which was the original Echo, then it's not going to work on there. And probably the Dot, I've got a Dot as well, which is the first iteration. I've never invested in upgrading these speakers, to be honest. I have them on my Sonos speakers, and it does most of what I want to do on those. I'm going to be curious about whether it will actually come to those kind of smart speakers like Sonos and Bluesound and other ones that actually support the service at the moment. So it would be interesting to hear from anybody who has taken advantage of it, the rollout in your area. I'd be really interested to know whether it works on your other smart speaker devices like your Sonos, and just how, what people think of it and how they get on with it.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know that as well. It is funny you said that because I don't have any native Amazon devices. I just use it all on my Sonos. So I was thinking, yeah, I don't think I'm getting this anytime soon. I think Amazon are going to keep this to their devices for as long as they can, in my opinion.
I would say so.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
we'll see if you do get it because it is rolling out in phases. So if you do get it, let us know how you get on with it. We'd love to hear about that. Hubert, what's going on with you this week?
I'm running a little tech experiment on my phone. I've been told many, there's been a debate going on as to whether, when you're using apps on your phone, should you completely close them from the app switcher, completely shut them off when you finish using them, or whether you should leave them in the background and which one, because reopening them again takes a lot more battery power than actually just dismissing them when you're done with them, just kind of putting them to the background. That debate's been going on. So I thought I'll run an experiment for about a week or so and I will stop closing my apps. I'll just move them to the background and turn off background app refresh for apps that seem to be taking a lot of battery working in the background, which I've been doing, to try and see if it does actually make a difference to my battery life, because I'm curious and sometimes in the evenings I don't have all that much to do, so it's just something for me to do. I have to say, I've not noticed any difference at all. If anything, it's either the same, or if anything, sometimes I find that I use more battery that way than I have before, which is quite interesting because most of kind of the articles I've read on various providers such as Mac Rumors and all the kind of various popular Apple discussion forums, most of the forums seem to say the exact opposite. Yet I don't know. I'm getting results that kind of make me want to go back to my previous way of doing things, which is completely closing an app unless I'm actually using it.
I'm surprised you've heard it that way around, Hubert. I would have always assumed that it's better to actually close the app. It's maybe a case of if you're going to be constantly flicking between two or three, or if you're using them a lot, then maybe it's better to just leave it open than it is to keep closing and reopening it. But quite often, if I think my battery's gone down significantly, I'll bring up the app switcher and find that, oops, I do have 10 or 11 apps on the go because I've been bouncing around lots of different tasks at once and forgotten to close some of them as I'm finished with them. And it's the same thing I'd do on a laptop. If I get the battery warning message, the first thing I'd look at is, are there any windows open I can close to try and keep this going a bit longer?
Yeah, it's just an interesting one because I thought I'd do a bit of research last weekend as to what kind of has been said about this topic from kind of the more well-recognized sites. And yeah, most of the common things, according including Apple themselves, apparently, do say that you actually closing your apps does take more battery than, and reopening them takes more battery than just leaving them in the app switcher, which, something I found surprising and hence why I wanted to experiment, although so far, yeah, I'm not convinced.
So I laughed a little bit when you first started saying this because this used to be I don't think it is as much nowadays. I don't think it matters as much, to be honest, with more modern processors and things that we've got. But this used to be a massive thing with iPhones, like one of these big debates that would go on, like, should you close your apps? And there'd be people on the extreme side, yeah, always close your apps. No, you've got to close your apps. It'll save your battery. And then other people go, no, it won't. Apple tell you not to. It used to be a massive thing in the sort of nerdy tech world. But I think the argument used to be that if you close an app, when you open it again, it's got to load it back up into memory, which then puts more power on the processor to load it up and then unload it, and that drains your battery. But I don't, nowadays, I don't think it really makes a difference. I will close any apps using GPS, and I don't really know why, but any apps using the camera as well. So, like, if I'm done with Scene AI, I'll quit that. I don't think it does use the camera in the background. I don't think it keeps it active. I don't see why it would. But I don't know, GPS and camera tend to be the two biggest battery drainers, so I just close those. A lot of the GPS apps you have to be fair. If you keep Voice Vista, for example, open in your app switcher, it's just going to keep going on. So that's the way that I do it. Natalie, anything new with you?
Yeah, just a small thing, I suppose, for me, which is Bristol Braille announced a new Knut Scientific. Or it also does seem to be a bit that you can upgrade if you've already got other versions of Knut. I've not got a lot to say on it because they didn't have a lot to say on it, but they seem to be really focusing in on the sort of maths and science world. They seem to have realised that actually the multi-line display is brilliant for anyone using Braille full stop, obviously, but there's huge potential in what we call the STEM world, so science, technology, engineering, mathematics, particularly because it has been so difficult for people with visual impairment to really progress in those fields. So they seem to have honed in on that, which piqued my interest. But like I say, other than saying they're focusing on these elements, they've not given a lot of detail as to what those would look like. So I'm interested to see where this goes and what comes from it.
Yeah, they've at the time of recording, at least, they've said that it's got dedicated apps for those sort of subjects. But yeah, no real detail on what they are yet. The Canoe actually is the multi-line braille display that I've had the longest time with. So I've not seen the Monarch. I very, very briefly saw the dot pad. That was last year, actually, at the inclusive design thing. But I met up with the guys at Bristol Braille for a bit, actually, and tried out the Knut for a couple of hours. It is really, really interesting. The fact that it's based on Linux as well, which I think is, it's an interesting choice, because obviously most organizations, if you're bringing this into the workplace or bringing it into education, they are Windows based, generally speaking. But with it being on Linux and with it being aimed at a more the sort of technical range of subjects, it does open it up quite a lot, because the operating system is open source. They can develop much quicker on a platform like that. So I've got high hopes for this. I feel like Bristol Braille do a lot of really cool stuff, but it just kind of gets overshadowed a bit by the others that are out there sometimes. Have you had much experience with this one, Jackie? Because, like, you're getting quite into this multi-line stuff.
Yeah, I did have a Canute 360, and I really, really loved it when I was doing my master's because I was able to read a lot of documents, because in those days it was a reader, and you could put your text on an SD card, and I used to run it through Duxbury, to translate it, and then I'd pop them on the Canute, so it was really good. But I sold mine so that I could put it towards my Monarch, and I've seen the Canute console, which is like the Canute goes into like a little device, a case, and it's got a screen on it, and there's a keyboard that folds out underneath it. It's quite cool, actually.
It is. That's the one that I saw, the
Yeah,
console.
yeah.
Yeah.
It is good, but I think it is more for and I hope Ed will forgive me for this if he's listening, but it is more for the nerdy person, I think. If you just want to read your books and you just want to have, multi-line Braille reading your textbooks, that's fine. That's very simple. But if you go beyond that into the realms of other apps and like coding and anything like that with the console as well, it does start to get very technical. But it's good, and there is a place in the market for it, I believe, because the other multi-line displays concentrate on graphics and they concentrate on working with screen readers. I think if Canyu on its own worked with JAWS or NVDA, I think that would be a really, really interesting proposition. But as it stands, it's open source, and I think that while it can be apps can be written and stuff for it, I think it is a bit more geeky in that sense.
I think that's fair though. I mean, I know when I was doing networking at uni, there was a lot of like really obscure apps for I mean there's things like Wireshark for capturing network packets and stuff, which is pretty mainstream, but then there was all these kind of obscure ones for things that we were doing, like hacking and digital forensics, ethical hacking, I should just say. Don't panic. But yeah, it could have been great for that. In theory, if it is just using a standard Linux distribution on over the, like underneath, there is a lot of pretty techy stuff that could run on this, I think. So we're going to hopefully try and find out more about this because I'm really, really interested in it. So we've had a little bit of news of some more apps that are hopefully coming to the Meta glasses range, I suppose, because it apparently these are going to work across all of them. This is in relation to that software development kit that they've released. So none of these have really given dates apart from Aira. So Aira, apparently while we were at CSUN, have said in an interview that their integration with the glasses should be coming by the end of March, apparently. So Aira, just for those like who don't know or are a bit confused by this, so Aira is on the glasses in a form of you call up through the Aira app, they then throw you over to a WhatsApp call, and then you can get the glasses that way because obviously they support WhatsApp. But you couldn't, the way you can call Be My Eyes, where you just say, hey Meta, be my eyes, you can't do that with Aira. Whereas with this new integration that they're working on, which should be available by the end of March, we are going to have that native support, same way we do with Be My Eyes. So that should be good. And the other app that has been announced as coming to the glasses is the Orion app. It got quite a bit of talk last year, I think. This is the app that can help you find objects around your environment, and you can teach it your personal objects as well. So if you've got a particular, backpack, for example, you can teach it what that looks like, and it will be able to find that for you if you need it to. And it can also do the usual sort of AI things like describe your environment, and then from that it can help you navigate to certain things within your environment. They're working on a glasses app as well. So I don't know when this all comes out, because I think these are, from what Aira have kind of said, I think these are all kind of in the hands of Meta in terms of when they can be released, but I can't wait for this to come out. There's loads of cool apps that are going to be appearing. We already know CNAI is coming as well. So, very interesting times for these.
That is interesting. I'm particularly looking forward to the integration with Seeing AI because that's my preferred app of choice. And it would be nice to be able to take advantage of the platform I like with the hands-free tech of the glasses.
They're also Be My Eyes. I think they're going to be having the service directory on the glasses as well. And the family members that you can create, your family group or your group, I think that's coming to the glasses as well. So it's really, I think for a mainstream product, it's brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, much like with the Canute stuff, we'll be keeping you up to date with that. When it does come, I think you can expect a lot of demos as well. So look forward to that. Well, another busy week in the technology world, as always. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and I am here at Site Village Glasgow 2026 at the Optelec table with Paul Bartley. Hi, Paul. Thanks Hello. For talking to us.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
Can you tell us a bit about what you've got on offer today?
Yeah. So, well, Optelec are an assistive technology manufacturer who've been going for well over 50 years now, and we cover every aspect of people's journeys with sight loss, from good old-fashioned optical magnifiers, anti-glare shield, lighting, to electronic, portable, semi-portable desktops, video magnifiers, and then text-to-speech devices, braille, software, pretty much everything in one-stop shop. But what we've got as a new product at the moment, we've kind of redesigned the wheel. We have a range of optical magnifiers that we primarily supply to hospital NHS clinics, low vision clinics, so these are issued free of charge. Historically, they always came with a good old-fashioned 2 or 3 AA, AAA batteries, which some people struggled changing the batteries, obviously, with the sight loss. Other people just didn't like the idea because the batteries obviously don't last that long. So we went back to our guys, and they've moved up to the 21st century, because everything nowadays, as you know, is run by rechargeable lithium batteries. Smartphones, tablets, you name it, the world runs on these rechargeable batteries. So we said, well, why can't we do that with a magnifier? So even though the magnifier with the illumination is exactly the same as it's always been, we've effectively sealed the battery compartment and put a USB-C, so again, worldwide standard USB-C connection, to recharge a lithium battery instead, which gives you now 18 hours of power on one charge. An LED that shows up when you plug the charger in, and because it's USB-C, it doesn't matter the orientation of the cable to work on that one. So we're finding already it's a lot easier for people to plug in, because they're used to it, because they have a smartphone and they have a tablet. So even, you know, for people who just want to keep very simple, no more fiddly batteries, these things are available, only for effectively a few pound more on top of the standard price. So we have these in stand magnifiers, hand magnifiers, and even pocket magnifiers, all using the same technology on that side as well. Still come through with the three different colour temperatures. Hard to do this on the radio, but we have an orange light, a white light, and a bluey white light, for different people's visual issues. Macular conditions, for instance, do prefer what we call a 4500 Kelvin, which is more of a white light, but we have different light levels for different people, just again for glare issues and things like that. And finally, yes, we also introduced, again reinvent the wheel, a torch, because a lot of people just need good illumination and they've had the stigma of not wanting to walk around with, as I call it, a Sherlock Holmes magnifier. They don't like doing that, and I get that. I totally understand that. So we went back to our guys and said, how about just having a much more brighter torch instead? Because everybody uses torches. It's never a problem. So we did exactly the same thing. So again, we have the battery and USB-C charger just for people with low-level magnification needs. So yeah, we've got all these available, and they've been available for about 3 months now, and already I'd probably say about 40% of NHS clinics have switched to these and moved away from the battery ones, just on environmental use. You know, there's no more batteries, so there's no more wastage, no more landfill. Kind of work simple on that. So that's one of the main new products that Optelec and Schweizer have got out at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really exciting for so many reasons, like you say, because for people that are coming to terms with needing a bit more magnification but want to not draw too much attention to themselves, you've got the torches, and people with a power bank, or even if they have a magnifier that runs out of battery at a friend's house, everyone's going to have a cable.
Absolutely. And again, it is often a case of keep it simple. Don't overcomplicate the matter. And yeah, luckily, you can't get much more simple than a magnifier. So by doing this, we've just brought it up to the 21st century without causing the usual stress and strains of new technology. It's not a problem. And when people know that, it's like, oh yeah, I totally understand that. And yeah, I'll have one of them instead, please. Thank you very much. So yeah.
Absolutely. And how can people find these and buy one?
Yeah, well, again, mostly a lot are through the low vision clinics. So even, obviously, we're in Glasgow, so Gartnavel are going to be moving over to this range, hopefully soon. But generally speaking, most hospital low vision clinics have them. Also, a lot of the sight loss charities, including the national ones like RNIB, also have these and move it over to this new style one. And again, we're not stopping the battery version because there's still people who prefer the battery version. But this is a modern day alternative. So they're available from national, local sight loss charities and also some independent opticians who are starting to bring on the range as well. So pretty much everywhere. And of course, obviously, directly from ourselves.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Paul, for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And we'll be hearing more from Amelia at Sight Village a little bit later.
Now on a Tech Talk, we are going to try and make your travel experience a little bit different with an app that I've mentioned in our Tech Radar feature a few weeks ago. The app I'm talking about is called WikiTrip, powered by Wikipedia. The way I'd summarise it is it's a unique travel guide. So this app basically uses your location and will generate Wikipedia articles based on your current location, which will be read to you by a voice of your choice, whether it's a paid voice or a free voice. That's a very short version. So what will happen is this app, when once opened and kind of you allowed it permissions for location and things like that, it will scan your location and it will look through the Wikipedia database. So that's what it is powered by. So some information may or may not be correct. You keep this in mind. However, it uses Wikipedia to bring you articles based on your current location. It will then play the article for you, which you can listen to, and it can use either free voices, which are provided with iOS, or it can use paid premium voices if you get a monthly or an annual subscription. I have paid for a year's worth of subscription just because I want to try it out with a bit of a more natural voice, but you don't have to. You can just keep it free. The subscription is £29.99 a year or £3.99 a month. So up to you whether you feel this is something you want to pay. But what I'm going to do today is give you a little bit of a taster of what this app does. So what we will do is we will open the app. And once I open it, it will start looking for an article. Once it finds one, it will then read it. So we will see what that is. Before we open it, I'll tell you what you can expect once the app is open, because that's quite important. Most of the screen will be covered by a map view, which with screen readers isn't often the most accessible. So your best bet to actually use the app is move your finger around the bottom of the screen where there's a few buttons, which I'll show you. On that note, let's give it a go.
Welcome to WikiTrip.
So this is what you get at the start.
Just start moving, walk, drive, or ride, and WikiTrip reads aloud the fascinating stories behind the places you pass. Your personal audio guide, powered by Wikipedia. WikiTrip is free to use with your device's built-in voice. Upgrade to premium to unlock 13 natural-sounding AI voices. Continue. Button.
Right, let's continue.
Continue. Unlock premium voices. Get access to 13 selected annual. £29 months. Terms of use. Privacy pop. Restore. Button.
I've already purchased one, so I'm going to tap
restore. WikiTrip. Looking for location. Found article. Pentonville Road. Speech off.
It's found the article. Let's see if it reads it.
Pentonville Road. 0.2 kilometers west. Pentonville Road is a road in central London that runs west to east from King's Cross to City Road at the Angel Islington. The road is part of the London Inner Ring Road and part of the boundary of the London Congestion Charge Zone. The road was originally built in the mid-18th century as part of the New Road, a bypass of central London for coach traffic. It was named Pentonville Road after the new town of Pentonville that encouraged manufacturing to move out of the city and into suburbia. Numerous factories and commercial premises became established on the road in the 19th and 20th centuries, particularly after the arrival of London railways in the 1840s. As industrial manufacturing fell out of favor in London in the late 20th century, many properties are now residential or student accommodation. Current premises include the Crafts Council Gallery on the site of a former chapel, the Scala nightclub in a former cinema, and the castle.
Speech on. Stop. Button.
I'm going to press stop now. So it did read us the article about Pentonville Road because I'm currently sitting in our very own RNIB Grimaldi building. Now, this article doesn't mention the RNIB building, but again, it depends when this article was last updated. That's kind of something you have to contend with as well. But that's the upshot. So if I didn't press stop and let the app continue, it would simply read the next article, which you never know, could be the RNIB, because that is showing up on the map view. So it could be a Wikipedia article about the RNIB. So you just keep it going and it will play. And if it reaches the end of the articles in your current location, it will tell you to move to hear more articles, because ideally this app works better when you're actually moving location. But either way, it's quite interesting nevertheless, the way it works. Let me show you just quickly what you've got in terms of buttons on the bottom of the screen, which is where I suggest you start navigating, because you don't want to get stuck in the map view. So the buttons are...
Random article button.
Random article. If you don't want to kind of have articles based on your location, you can just press that button. It will generate you a random article from about any location. I think I once tried this and I got an article about a place in Morocco.
Start button.
If you press this button start, it will then start looking for articles again.
Settings button.
And you've got settings.
My location, 154A Pentonville Road, London.
And you've got your location as well. Let me quickly show you some settings.
Start button. Settings. Settings. Heading. Done. Button. Subscription. Heading. Subscription status, premium.
So I do have the premium subscription just because I was curious about the voices, quite honestly. But again, if the free voices you get with iOS are well enough fine for you, then just use them. It's whatever works for you at the end of the day.
Subscription support, button, location, heading, location, while using app, button.
So I've given it access to location while I'm using the app, which I think is the best way to do it.
Playback, heading. Voice, Nova, button.
So the voice is currently set to Nova. There's a ballad voice, which I think sounds a bit better as a travel guide, but I think my app somehow reset my voice preference.
Voice speed, 1x.
You can change your voice speed if you like. For me, I probably would change it a little bit, just because I like things at faster rates.
Voice speed, decrement, 1. Voice speed, increment, minimum. Distance, 50 meters. Minimum distance, decrement, minimum distance, increment, 50 meters, minimum, time, 30s. Minimum time, Minimum time, decrement, minimum time, increment, 30. Distance unit, system, km, button, pop-up button.
So you can change these settings, and next you'll get a little explanation as to why and what that means.
A new article plays only after both the minimum distance and time since the last article are met.
Go.
History. Heading.
Then you've got your history.
Previous articles. 1 articles. Button.
So I've cleared my history before we did this demo, which I believe reset a lot of the settings, actually. So do bear in mind that clearing history not only means clearing the history of articles you've listened to, but it might actually make the app act as if you've just got it, which means if you did purchase the premium voice subscription, you may have to just tap on restore to restore your purchase rather than purchase it again.
Clear history button.
So that's the clear history button.
Feedback heading.
Then you've got a few ways to give feedback.
Rate wiki trip button.
So you can rate the app.
Share wiki trip button.
You can tell your friends.
Email the maker button.
You can email the maker.
Your feedback helps make wiki trip better. Help heading.
Then you've got some help links.
How to use button. Welcome screen button. Get help button. Legal heading.
Then you've got a few legal things like terms and conditions, privacy policy, that sort of stuff. And that, to be honest, in short, is Wikitrip. It's a unique travel guide version. And I think it makes traveling a little bit more interesting and a little bit different, because you can just have it in your headphones. And every now and again, you'll get an interesting article to listen to, depending on your location. So it'll be relevant as well. I'd give it a go, whether you're on the train, on a bus, or even when you're walking, it might tell you things about where you are that you may not have heard before. So it's a different way to educate yourself about your surroundings as well, I think. That's WikiTrip. Let us know what you think of it, if you've used it. It would be great to hear from you. Or if you have a similar apps that can do something like that, we would love your app recommendations. And if there's an app you would like demonstrated, please let us know as well, because we would be happy to do it. At that email address, as always, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. We now return to Amelia Hilton, who's been seeing what's going on at Site Village Glasgow.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and we're here at Site Village Glasgow 2026 at the Humanware table, and I'm joined by Martin. Hi Martin, thanks for talking to us.
Hi Amelia, good to speak to you today.
So you have an exciting new product, can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, we've got a new product. We've had the Braille Note out for a long time, probably 26 years or thereabouts now, and we've iterated and innovated and done our own thing over the years, and at the moment we're about to launch the new version of that, the Braille Note Evolve, one of the first purpose-built note takers to be based on Windows, the Windows 11 Pro platform.
Nice, that's really exciting. And obviously in the name there are some new features or developments from the last one. What's different about this?
So I guess the main difference is we've jumped from the Android platform over to Windows. So what we found is that with Android we were having to maybe update hardware more than we wanted, because the operating system would come out of date and then we'd have to struggle to keep up, then we'd have to release new hardware, and it wasn't satisfactory for consumers or for us as a company. So the technology's around now where we can have a Windows device which is very sleek and portable and be on a mainstream platform, but also give you easy to use key commands and note taker style features. So at the moment I'm in Microsoft Word on here, and I'll just read the title bar.
Document 2 Word.
So I mean, it's a Document 2 Word. So a lot of our customers like an easy to use interface. So if I go into our ribbon at the top.
File functions select.
So we've got file functions.
Edit functions select. Formatted functions select.
File, edit and format. So what we've done is we've taken our KeySoft menu system and put that into the actual full version of Microsoft Word. So we hope that that will make it really acceptable within government, because we're using a mainstream operating system, like a full government-grade operating system. But we still want our users to be able to have those really easy-to-use shortcut keys and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really exciting because, as you say, a lot of organisations and employers use Microsoft, and it's a skill that people want to see. So it sounds like it's going to make things a lot easier for people to get those skills.
I mean, we'll still have some of our own applications that we write for this, and we will still do that because we recognise that, you know, things like the ribbon can be a bit of a pain at times. Obviously, not everyone needs that amount of customization. And we're really excited to announce this last week at the CSUN conference that we've announced JAWS for Braille Note, which is something I never thought I'd ever hear in my life. You know, JAWS for Braille Note? Wow. So, you know, if someone doesn't want to use our NVDA-based Braille technology, which we've done a lot of work on that, by the way, they can run JAWS on this thing. It's a tiny little device.
Yeah, it's really sleek and beautiful. It looks very light, and it's about the size of a book, or like a slightly larger than a traditional book, and it's very slim. Yeah.
So what we've got is, at the front we've got a Braille display and our traditional thumb keys that we always have on our device for moving through documents and so on. We then have a space bar, and to either side of the space bar there's a cluster of three keys. Now these are your typical Windows keys, like Control, Alt, Shift, Function, Insert, and Windows. But you can customize those, so you might want Shift somewhere else, or, you know, Control somewhere else. And they'll actually be, I believe, disabled out of the box. So we're going note taker first for the most basic kind of user. And then we've got an Escape key at the top left and a Delete key at the top right. And then we've got things like Thunderbolt ports. So we've got two Thunderbolt ports. We've got an Intel Ultra 5 processor, so a really powerful new processor. It's not an i5, it's a new Ultra 5 processor. And we've got like volume buttons and a dictation key as well. So we're going all in on the Windows thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And for people that want to connect different types of headphones, what kind of things can they use?
Okay, you can use USB, you can use Bluetooth, or you can, there's an actually an old-fashioned headphone jack on there as well. So I think everything's covered.
Absolutely.
Anything you can do on a Windows machine, you can do on this. So if I press the Windows key and the letter D.
Top list, main menu, Microsoft Edge.
Now I'm just in the normal desktop. So if I wanted to go and install something like MuseScore for doing music work, or I don't know, if I wanted to install some audio editing software to use, I could just install anything I want on this, and it's something that weighs under a kilo. It's pretty incredible, really.
Do people need to keep it plugged in the whole time, or does it store charge?
No, we're expecting a battery life of around 7.5 to 8 hours, but that depends how you use it. If you're going to be, you know, rendering video all day, that will punish the processor. But for normal note taking, we're expecting a battery life of about 7.5 to 8 hours. You can charge with USB chargers or USB battery packs on the go. And yeah, I just think it's something different, right? No one's done this before. So there's been a Braille laptop before, but there's never been a Braille Windows-based note taker, to my knowledge, with this kind of power.
Yeah, absolutely. And how can people learn more about it and buy it, and where is it available?
Okay. They can contact us on 01933 415 800. That's a UK number, 01933 415 800, and you can go to our website www.humanware.com, humanware, or you can drop me an email at Martin with an I, Martin dot Roberts, Roberts, at humanware.com.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Martin Roberts, for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
No problem, Amelia. Thanks.
And we're here at the Synaptic table, and I'm joined by Mary McMahon. Hi, Mary. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Amelia. Nice to be here.
So you have the first ever smartwatch specifically designed for blind and partially sighted people. Can you tell us about how the smartwatch was developed?
Okay, so basically it was developed in line with our other products. So we developed Synaptic quite a while ago, and it was an accessible kind of way to open up technology for people with sight loss. So we used those principles when we designed the smartwatch. So it still speaks whenever there's anything on the screen. It's a very simple menu system with very bright icons and colours. They're all customizable so that it fits with different people's preferences. And we've tried to keep everything simple, like we do with all of our products.
Can you talk us through some of the key features that people really like about this watch?
Yeah, so I mean, the watch face itself, we've got lots of different watch face choices, so people can sort of customize that and customize the colors. We have two different models of the watch. We have a basic watch. So if someone just wants a basic talking watch, it's got things like timers and alarms on it as well. That's £149 for that watch. Or we have the Plus watch, and it's sort of a little bit more along the lines of, say, like a standard Garmin watch, where you can also track health and fitness. So you can do things like your heart rate, steps, you can set fitness goals, and it also includes its own SIM. So it's a standalone product, so you can also do calls and texts with the product.
Can people attach Bluetooth to it? Is it compatible with hearing aids as well?
Yep, so it's compatible with some hearing aids, unless you need a companion app on a device. And it can also be attached to headphones via Bluetooth.
Fantastic. And what kind of feedback have you got from fans of the watch? Why do people really enjoy it?
I think generally people just enjoy it because it is like easy to see, it's very bright. The feedback we've had about other watches is that people still struggle to see them, even though they are adapted watches. They like the fact that everything is read out as you scroll through menu options, and also being able to make calls and send texts when you're out and about as well.
Absolutely, and I guess the fact it's a standalone watch as well means that if people don't want an expensive device that they have to sync up to other expensive devices, then it can just have its one function, do what you want, and you don't have to worry about keeping other bits of tech updated to make sure it still works.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So it's sort of uncomplicated in that sense. And we have had a few people give feedback as well about security, because I know there's a lot of worry now about, you know, being out and about with a phone and it maybe being sort of snatched. So some people just take their watch out, and then that way it's hidden and it's not, you know, in plain sight, as it were. So that's been another kind of advantage of having the standalone product.
Fantastic. And where can people learn more and buy a watch if they're interested?
Okay, so they can contact us directly at Synaptic. We have a sales email, sales@synaptic.com, or they can give us a call on 0191 907 9097 909.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
Making technology accessible. Tech Talk.
Many of us use dictation for entering text on our smartphones, and that works okay, but it does obviously come with its challenges in terms of punctuation and formatting and accuracy and all that kind of thing. Certainly for me, I don't dictate very often because the one on iOS, the built-in one, just never seems to be a great experience. It's not very accurate, and I just find it easier to use Braille screen input these days. But there's an app that I've seen a lot of blind people talking about recently on social media and who've been quite impressed with, so I thought I'd give it a go. And it's an app called Whisperflow. So that is W-I-S-P-R space flow, F-L-O-W. It uses AI, obviously, and it's an AI dictation app, essentially. So there's kind of three things that stand out for me with this one. The first one is that it's very accurate. I've been using this on and off. I haven't used it for every single message, but I've been using this quite a bit for the last couple of weeks or so. And I don't think it's made any mistakes, really. Certainly not any big ones like I used to find and still do find with the built-in iOS dictation. It's also very context-aware. So it recognises, based on the apps that you're in and the way that you're talking, the way that you're dictating, whether you're dictating sort of a more formal message or a more casual message. So say you're in Messages and what you're dictating is just a pretty casual message to a friend about something. It will recognise that and it will put things like punctuation in where it needs to, but it won't be too strict about getting the exact punctuation in exactly the right places and putting in new lines and new paragraphs and all that kind of thing. On the other hand, if it detects that you're in Mail, for example, and what you're dictating seems to be quite a professional, formal email, then it will give it that professional style. It will make sure that there's punctuation in the right places and line breaks and paragraph breaks in the right places and things like that. The third thing, which I really love about it, is that you can correct yourself while you're talking. So if you were to dictate a message that said, "Sounds great, let's have a chat tomorrow at 12 p.m. No, 1 p.m. What you would get in the message is, "Sounds great, let's have a chat tomorrow at 1 p.m. It would filter out where you did all that, and then said 12 and then corrected yourself and said 1. It would filter all that out and just put 1 p.m. It would recognise what you meant and that you'd corrected yourself. Whereas a lot of these services or these apps or these features will just, they're smart in that they will put punctuation in, for example, without you necessarily telling it to. But apart from that, they will literally just write what they hear. So if you talk in a bit of a mess, then your dictated message is going to be a bit of a mess. Whereas this, you don't necessarily have to think through what you're saying. Obviously, you've got to have some idea of what you're going to say, but you don't have to have your message fully formed, I guess. Or if you change your mind halfway through, you can change little bits. And it does tend to be really good at picking that up. I'll show you the setup process with this. It's one of those where the app itself for Whisperflow is accessible, but it is a little bit clunky. But once you've got it set up, it just appears as a keyboard input. So you can go in and use the app if you want to. It's got like a little notes feature in there, but it's kind of one of those where once you've got the app set up and the keyboard set up, you can kind of just put the app to one side a little bit. So let's go into the app.
Whisperflow. Whisperflow, 4x faster than typing.
So this is the sort of intro screen that you get.
Flow is a voice first, keyboard. Get started button.
So we've got a get started button here.
Get started. I can't keep up with my messages.
Right, so it asks you a question first, and you can't skip this. I don't really know why this is, though, what it's getting at, but let's go from the top of this screen because the focus has landed kind of in the middle of the screen.
Back button, button, 100%, 0%.
I don't know what those little percentages are. They come up a little bit as we're going through this as well, so just ignore those.
Which of these do you resonate with? Select all that apply. Category message, image, and illustrate. I can't keep up with my messages. Category email. My email backlog keeps piling up. Category chatting with AI slows me down. I struggle to capture ideas quickly. I often have to work on the go. I'm tired of typing all day.
So you've got a few options there for which of these do you resonate with, and you can select as many of those as you want. You do have to select at least one, though, so if I go down to next at the minute.
Next, diamond, button.
It's dimmed, so again, I don't really know why it asks this. It also doesn't tell you which options are selected. So I'm just going to get through this, I'm just going to double tap on that last one. I'm tired of typing all day, which is fairly accurate for me, I suppose.
I'm tired of typing. I'm tired of typing. Next, button.
So now we can go forward.
Back button, button, 100%. 100 flow helps you type faster in any app you like. Video. Mute, button. Next, button.
There's a few videos here. I don't really know what these are. I assume they're just visual, like maybe just little animations or something fancy like that.
Flow header, image, a black get started, image, black, continue with Google, button, continue with Apple, button.
Now this is where you set up your account or log into your account if you've already got one. I've already created one using sign in with Apple, so I'm just going to get myself signed in.
Let's set up Flow.
So I've signed in and we've now got this screen that says let's set up Flow.
This only takes a moment. Set up, button.
So let's click on set up.
Set back button, button. 100%. 0%. Set up your Flow keyboard in settings. Video. Whisper provides 100% privacy. We never store or sell what you say. Full keyboard access just allows Flow to work across your apps. Go to settings, button.
So let's click on go to settings.
Picture in picture displayed. Video. Picture in picture. Video. Pause, button. Video. Live app background app refresh switch button on.
Right, so this is what I mean about it being a little bit clunky. So what's happened is it's taken us to the Whisper Flow section of the iOS settings app, but it's saying all this picture in picture because, again, one of these little videos, so I assume it's telling you what to do in the video, so it's kind of got that going on at the top. But we're in the iOS settings app So we're in the Whisper Flow section of the iOS settings app where we can control its permissions and stuff. And what we're looking for here is keyboards. So I'll flick down.
Mobile data, key, Whisper Flow, version, Whisper Flow settings, keyboards, button.
There it is, keyboards.
Whisper Flow, switch button, on.
So that's the Whisper Flow keyboard, so we want that turned on.
Allow full access, switch button, off.
Now this is what we want to turn on as well, allow full access.
On. Alert. Allow full access for Whisper Flow keyboards. Full access allows the developer of this keyboard to transmit anything you type, including things you have previously typed with this keyboard. This could include sensitive information such as your credit card number or street address.
So this is just a privacy warning that comes up from Apple themselves when you enable full access to a third-party keyboard. But you've seen on the previous screen the privacy warning or privacy notice from them that says they never use that data, basically. So we'll click allow.
Allow, button. Settings, allow full access. Switch button, on.
So now we've allowed that, we should be able to flick back to Whisper Flow and carry on from there.
Now, let's test the magic. Try a quick dictation to see. Flow in action. Try Flow, button. Try Flow, button.
So now we can try it out.
Allow Flow to access. Your microphone. Flow needs microphone access to capture and transcribe what you say.
So it's got these weird little pauses mid-sentence, but it's just asking for microphone access. Again, pretty obvious why. So you need to allow that.
Continue, button. Continue. Alert. Whisper Flow would like to access the microphone.
Yep.
Allow, button. Whisper Flow. Back button. Back button. 100%. 33. 0%. Tap and hold for keyboard. Image. Black text. Video. Cap. I'm, cap, Q. Next keyboard, whisper flow.
Right. So, we're now in a text field, and it's brought up the keyboard. And on the bottom left, so what we've got at the minute is the standard iOS keyboard. But on the bottom left, if you use emojis, then it's in the same place as the button to switch to emojis. We've got that next keyboard whisper flow button. So if we double tap on this.
Next keyboard, English, UK.
We've now switched to the whisper flow keyboard. And around about the sort of middle right of the screen, roughly where the P key would be, the letter P, we've got a start flow button.
Start transcribing button.
So you've got to use this. The two-finger double tap that you might sometimes use to start dictation won't work on this keyboard. You've got to press this start transcribing button, and then when you're done, you want to double tap in the same place to then stop it transcribing. So I'll just do a very quick standard sort of test dictation, and then you can see how it comes out.
Start transcribing. Selected. Stop transcribing button.
Hello, this is just a quick test of the WhisperFlow dictation app for the RNIB Tech Talk podcast.
Selected. Stop transcribing button.
So now...
Hello, this is just a quick test of the WhisperFlow dictation app for the RNIB Tech Talk podcast. Start transcribing button.
There we go. It's inserted that in. Pretty accurate, I think. Spot on, by the sounds of it. I could go through this character by character and just double check it, but I don't think we need to. I think you can hear what we've got there is pretty good.
Text field is at next button.
So we've done the test, and we could exit at this point if we wanted to, but we'll click next.
Next. Back 100%, 60%, 0%, skip button. Try dictation email whisper experiment image. Black Tech Flow handles formatting and fixes your mistakes. Hey Tim. Excited to chat. Are you available next Friday at 3 p.m? Ellipsis. Actually 4 p.m. Thanks, Callum.
So this is, by the way, because I've used this before and the account is in my name, that's how it knows my name. It's not just that's not just a scary coincidence. But that's the bit that I was talking about earlier, where it can sort of correct itself. We'll skip all this for now, and I'll go into a different app, because at this point there's a few settings and you can tweak the styles and stuff, but I don't want to go too deep into all that in this demo. So we'll leave the native app there, I think. So let's skip this.
Back 160% skip button. Skip.
The only other things, if you continue through this sort of setup process, it just gives you a few other tips and a few other things that you can try. One of them is actually whispering. So as the name sort of implies a little bit, I guess, you can whisper to this and it will pick up what you're saying, apparently. Not something that I've tried, but apparently you can do it. So let's go into Drafts, which is an app that I like to use for this kind of thing, because basically, you open it up and it's just a text field. Open Drafts.
Drafts. Text field is editing. Character mode. Insertion.
So, similar to what we did within the WhisperFlow app, we've got the standard keyboard has popped up, but if we go to the bottom left, we've got that next keyboard button.
Next keyboard. WhisperFlow.
And again, if I just tap sort of roughly where the P key would be.
9. Button. Start transcribing button.
You heard that number there. So there is actually a WhisperFlow keyboard, like an actual keyboard on the screen, but I wouldn't recommend using it because the voiceover, much how the two-finger double tap doesn't work, neither do voiceovers kind of standard typing methods, because they're seen as buttons. So it would mean that you'd have to find each letter and double tap. You couldn't do the touch typing or the direct touch typing on this keyboard. So if you need to make any corrections or anything, I would flick back to the English UK keyboard for that, or the English US or whatever keyboard you use, the standard iOS one. So let's try just a dictation of an email that I might send. And I'll make a couple of mistakes as well and pause a little bit and, you know, stumble my words a little bit, and just we'll see how it handles it.
Selected. Stop transcribing button.
Hello, hope you're well. My name is Callum. I'm contacting you from the RNIB Tech Talk podcast. I was wondering if you'd be interested in recording a short interview with us. I will be available on Friday at 3 p.m. Let me know if that time works. Kind regards, Callum.
Selected. Hello, hope you're well. My name is Callum. I'm contacting you from the RNIB Tech Talk podcast. I was wondering if you'd be interested in recording a short interview with us. I will be available on Friday at 3 p.m. Let me know if that time works. Kind regards, Callum.
Right, there you go. So you heard what it put in there. As I said before, with some of the smart stuff that it does, it managed to filter out all those ums, and I think I said on twice for I'll be available on Friday because I was sort of thinking about it. And it corrected the 2 p.m. as well, because I originally said 2 p.m. and obviously it corrected that to 3 p.m. as I said. We can review this in a bit more detail as well, if you want to just see how it's formatted. Just for ease, I would switch back to the English UK keyboard in my case, just because of how that WhisperFlow keyboard is a little bit fiddly.
Next keyboard, English. Next keyboard, WhisperFlow.
That just means we've got the keyboard there in case we want to make any corrections. So I'll just have a flick through this. I won't go through everything, but I'll just have a flick through this in a little bit more detail just to show you the formatting that it's done as well.
Insertion point at start. Words.
I'll just use the rotor to kind of flick between this.
Hello, comma. Characters.
Let's put a comma there. Let's see if it's done a couple of new lines as well.
Space. H. Word. Oh, you apostrophe re. Well, full stop.
Okay, so it's done hello, hope you're well on the same line, which is okay, I guess.
Characters. New line. New line.
It's done a paragraph break there, which is good.
Words. My name is Callum, full stop, I apostrophe, contacting you from the...
This will be interesting. Let's see if it's capitalised tech talk.
Characters. Space. Cap. O. Cap. N. Cap. I. Cap. B. Space. Cap. T. E. C. H. Space. Cap. T. A. L. K. Space.
Yeah, it has. So it's recognised as well that that's a name of the podcast.
Words. Podcast. Capital I. Was one if you were B. Intro in. Record a short interview with us? Question mark.
Put a question mark there as well where it should be.
Character. Space. Words. Cap. I. Will be available on Friday at 3. P. Full stop. M. Full stop. Let me know if that time works. Full stop.
So I'm expecting some more new lines here as well.
Characters. New line. New line. Work kind. Regard Callum.
There you go. So it's formatted it. I would make a couple of changes there. And obviously you're not, you can change this as much as you want. I think I would personally would just space it out a little bit more. I'd of course also be a bit more detailed if I was emailing a potential guest. But, you get the gist. So that's how it handles emails. Let's just clear all this out and I'll just do another test one, which is just more of a similar to the test one that we saw earlier while we were going through the sale process, something that's just a bit more of a casual text that you might send.
Edit. Paste. Select. Paste. Select all.
Select all.
Hello. Hope. Delete. Option deleted. Hello. Hope.
So that's all gone. So let's flick back to the WhisperFlow keyboard.
Next keyboard. WhisperFlow. Start flow. Button.
So if we try something a bit more relaxed, we should see that it respects that relaxed style. It doesn't make it all, new lines and all professional looking.
Selected. Selected. Stop transcribing. Button.
Hey, just a quick one. Would you mind stopping at the shop and grabbing some milk on your way home? I completely forgot while I was out earlier. Thanks.
Selected. Hey. Just a quick one. Would you mind stopping at the shop and grabbing some milk on your way home? I completely forgot while I was out earlier. Thanks.
So it's got it spot on, words-wise, if we just have a quick look at how it's formatted it.
Next keyboard. English. UK. Character. Action. Text field. Is editing. Hey. Insertion point at start. Words. Hey, comma. Just a quick one, full stop. Characters.
So it's put a full stop there. I don't think it's done any new lines because we don't really need them.
Space. Cap. W.
Yeah, it's not So that's good.
Words. Oh, you mind stop at the shop and grab some meal on your way home? Question mark.
Got a question mark there where it should be.
Capital complete. Forgot while capital was out earlier. Thanks. Characters.
So you saw there that it put a full stop as well at the end of earlier, but it's not put one at the end of thanks. And I think it's adapted that from me, because if it's just a fairly casual message like this, I don't tend to put a full stop at the very end of it. So it did do that at first, but I kept deleting those, and eventually it seemed to kind of click that that's not how I type. And as I said, I've not been using this for ages, so it has done a pretty good job of figuring out how I tend to write messages. So that is just a quick demo of Whisperflow. As I said, the setup process was kind of the longest part of this, because it is a little bit fiddly, just the way it presents itself. And bringing up the settings in that picture-in-picture view with the little video at the top. And it can be a bit sort of... Because I've used these sorts of apps before, I kind of knew what we were looking for in terms of keyboard permissions and stuff, but it doesn't make it entirely clear, or at least not from a text description anyway. So, but once you get it going, it is really, really good. You can get this on iOS, as you've seen here, Windows as well. It's available on Windows, and they've currently got a wait list at the time of recording for Android. So they've got a beta version available for Android that they're testing, and you can join the wait list to be added to that. I haven't tried the Windows version, just because I've never dictate on Windows, to be honest. I've always learned to touch type, so I can type really, really fast on the QWERTY keyboard. But if you do want to use it on Windows as well, you can do. It is a free app, but there is a subscription for unlimited words and some extra features. So on the free plan that I'm on at the minute, you have, I think it's 1,000 words per week, which sounds like quite a lot to me. But then maybe that's because, as I said before, I don't really use this all of the time. I suppose if you're constantly using this, then yeah, maybe 1,000 words is pretty limiting. But you can upgrade to the subscription and get unlimited words and a few other features as well, just to make it a little bit smarter. But personally, I'm pretty happy with the free plan. I still primarily use Braille screen input, to be honest, just because I'm so used to it. And dictating on the move, for example, unless it's just a quick, you know, short message, I just don't tend to do it. I think just because I've got so used to it, using Braille screen input or using the on-screen keyboard. But this is definitely making me dictate more when I need to, when it is just a short message and it's just quicker and easier to say it. This is actually, I am actually using this and really, really enjoying it. So that is Whisperflow. I'll just spell that name again. It's W-I-S-P-R space flow. That's in the App Store. And the website, if you want to get the Windows version, is whisperflow, all one word, .ai. So that's WISPRFLOW.AI. And there's a link to download the Windows version there as well. And that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. If you've got any comments or any thoughts or any questions, is there something we can help you out with, or is there anything just generally that you want to share with us? It doesn't have to be high tech. Sometimes the low tech solutions are the best, but either way, techtalk@rnib.org.uk is how you can get in touch with us. Voice notes or written messages are always welcome. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavelkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye for now.
Bye.
See you next week.